Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Audio bandwidth for Net at Night is provided by AOL Music and Spinner.com, where you can get free MP3s, exclusive interviews, and more. Video bandwidth for Net at Night is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
It's time for Net at Night with Amber MacArthur and Leo Laporte, episode 148 for April 21st, 2010. Katarina Fake. Net at Night is brought to you by GoToTraining. Improve learning, participation, and access to training programs and save a bunch with GoToTraining. For a free trial, visit GoToTraining.com. And by Squarespace.com, the fast and easy way to publish a high-quality website or blog. For a free trial and 10% off your new account, go to Squarespace.com/night, N-I-G-H-T. It's time for Net at Night from Petaluma, California, U.S. of A. I'm Leo Laporte.
And from Phoenix, Arizona, I'm Amber MacArthur.
Phoenix! Hi, Amber.
Yes. Hi, Leo.
Another speaking engagement?
Yep. I have, I think, 5 this month, so
wow.
I don't... It's crazy. I have been in Edmonton, Quebec City, and now Phoenix in 5 days. So.
Wow. What do you talk about when you speak?
It's all social media. So tomorrow morning, for example, I'm talking about how the restaurant industry can use social media in their businesses, which is really interesting because, as I'm sure you can imagine, there are so many great applications for the social media in that space. So that's going to be a really fun one to talk about.
Do you tell them that they should give the mayor of Foursquare some, like, extra food?
Or, you know, deals, and just keep on top of what people are saying about them on Twitter. And, you know, it's all basic stuff, Leo, but the reality is that we are so far ahead with all the technology that we talk about on the show. The average person really doesn't understand how some of this stuff works. And so it's really education based as far as my talks and telling them, you know, what some of the tools are, how they work.
Are you saying, like, this is Twitter? This is what Twitter is? This is how you use it?
Yeah, sometimes.
Kind of
yeah, with some audiences. I mean, I have audiences where for the majority, most of the people don't understand how Twitter works. And if they've heard of it before, they don't really get it. And so it's a lot of me kind of giving them examples of how it can be beneficial. I just spoke to, I think, 700 realtors on Sunday, and just talking about, you know, how the tools can be applied in their business. And not that it replaces everything on the marketing front, but it definitely complements what they're already doing.
Do you mention Facebook? I mean, how important is Facebook?
Yeah. You know, Leah, you can't really get away from Facebook. There's 400 million people on it right now, and I feel like it's such a good tool. My only issue with Facebook, and I don't know how you feel about this, is I kind of hate the usability of Facebook. I feel like it's really unfriendly, and I think for the average person, understanding the difference between a personal account and then having a fan page, which is like a company page, but then they're like, well, what if they aren't fans?
It,
you know, there's all these weird...
It's complicated, isn't it?
It is complicated.
Yeah.
So,
just even understanding the culture, and I think that's probably the thing you probably do the best and that is most important is you got to understand the culture before you get into it.
Yeah, you do. And I think one of the biggest issues that I face when I'm talking is trying to convince companies that they should even let their employees use these tools at work, because for the most part, a lot of them don't. And they don't agree that their employees should be able to be on Facebook and be on these other social networking websites. And so I'm kind of starting from scratch. So, but it's fun. I enjoy it.
Good. Well, you found a great niche. And I have to say, you know, when you go somewhere like South by Southwest, every third person is a new, you know, social media consultant. You really know this stuff. You live it. And so you're a perfect person to speak
thanks
about.
Thanks to all of the time that I spend reviewing all of these different sites.
We saw it coming up. I mean, we were there at the beginning and just kind of participated. And this show really has chronicled that from the earliest days of Twitter, the earliest days of YouTube, and on. This is what we've been talking about.
Yeah, exactly. So, it's, you know, it's always that balance. And I think I talked about this last week between talking about some of the tools that are useful right now and also talking about some of the stuff that's coming down the pipe, like Blippi, and how that's popular among a small group of people, and just sort of identifying what could be useful to people. But the reality is some stuff, we're even too far ahead. You know, sometimes I have to step way back when I'm talking.
I think Blippi is one of those.
Blippi, I think we're a little, I'm a little ahead of. I love Blippi, but I can see, you know, whenever I show anybody Blippi, they go, why would I want to reveal what I buy?
Yeah, I like if people in the audience had fruit when I started talking about Blippi, they would probably throw it at me because all of a sudden their faces turn sour and they just look angry when I mention what Blippi does. I mean, there's a real...
should we explain it? We've explained it before, but I guess we should mention this is Philip. Did we ever get Philip on? Philip Kaplan?
Yeah.
He talked about it, right?
Oh, no, we didn't get him on. We got his partner on.
That's right. So that's right. Ashfine. So Blippi is... kind of a Twitter, but you don't tweet. Your credit card does, I think is probably the easiest way to describe it.
Yeah.
So when you buy something, Blippi tells your followers, and I have 6,000 followers, so it tells a lot of people what you bought. And then they can buy it, by the way. Usually the links are hot, so they can go off and buy it. And they can comment on it. So here, Pud, Philip Kaplan, spent $109 at Skoma's, which is the great seafood restaurant in San Francisco. And he comments, delicious seafood and a lot of it. And John says, where is it? But gee, all you have to do is click the link to Skoma's and it'll take you. And this is where Blippi, oh, maybe it didn't. It just shows other Skoma purchases. This is where Blippi, oh, there it is. There's the link to Skoma's restaurant. So there's where Blippi really could be. Wow, who are the ocean? Blippi could really be a value to a business.
Yeah.
If they kind of realize it. And what's interesting is Amazon, which was a cooperating initially, stopped cooperating. And so I have my accounts here, and Amazon, let me make sure it's not going to show anything I don't want to show. I don't think it does. No, Amazon stopped working.
Yeah.
And you know what they did? They did an interesting thing with it. They said, all right, well, here's the deal. If you have a Gmail account, we'll just capture your Gmail and search for Amazon purchases and share it that way.
Oh,
I'm not sure I like that so much.
Yeah.
But I've got Netflix, Audible. You know, you have to, you know, we are weird. You have to be able to live in a world where you've got nothing to hide, I guess.
But I think that's part of you. I've been thinking so much about this and why, like, I only have Blippi set up so it's pulling from my iTunes purchases. And to be honest with you, I really don't buy that much. You know, rent movies once in a while, buy a few songs here and there. And I think the reality is, I think a lot of people think that this type of information is a lot more important than it actually is. And quite frankly, I don't care if people know what I bought on iTunes. You know, it's really not that interesting.
No, so but it's interesting to somebody who buys iPhone apps or buys music to see what Amber listens to. I think that is interesting. Or your Netflix. Exactly. So yeah, you probably, I don't put all my credit cards on here. I don't, you know, you don't want them to know when you go out and you buy shoes necessarily, but it's of interest when you buy a record. What is she listening to? Maybe I'd like that.
Yeah, and I don't feel like that's sort of sacred information that I can't share.
Right.
Like the reality is that at the end of the day, I don't care. You know, I don't feel like I have anything to hide on that front.
Well, that's the story of this show, really, is that we cover interesting, innovative uses of the internet and technology. Blippi's one. We've covered that before. Coming up this episode, I'm really thrilled about our guest.
Yes, we have Katarina Fake, and for people who don't know her, she is the co-founder of Flickr, and she recently went on to co-found Hunch, and we talked about Hunch, I think last week or the week before when we did that Twitter predictor game where Hunch tried to guess what type of people follow you, and it was fairly accurate, and at that point, we thought we need to get her on and figure out how they actually figure this stuff out.
Yeah, I can't wait. Hunch.com. But before we do that, we've got some great links for you. And before we get the great links, I do want to mention a great new sponsor. Actually, it's an old sponsor, an old friend who's back with a new product. You know Citrix, of course. They do GoToMeeting, yes. GoToMyPC, the great Citrix Enterprise Remote Access. They've been around for a long time. GoToAssist. They've got a new one called GoToTraining. And I think that this is something that you might, from time to time, want to tell the people you speak to about. If you're doing corporate training of any kind, you know, there's a lot of solutions out there, but they're pricey, they're complicated, they're difficult to use, not just for you, but for your trainees.
Yeah.
This is where Citrix really excels in making a consumer product that's easy for everybody to use. GoToTraining is a web-based tool which allows as many as 200 people to connect to a training session right at their desktops, live, in real time, or you can record the training session and they can play it back at any time. Huh. It's built for companies or consultants who need to train employees or customers that are spread out all over. You know, you can't afford to or don't want to, or it's just logistically impossible to bring them into one spot to do the training. You can use this online solution. It's got screen sharing. That's what they're famous for. You can pass presenter control around. So if you've got three experts in three different locales, Each of you can train. There's voiceover. Is that nice? It's voiceover IP enabled, as always. Chat and session recording. Plus, you've got things like in-application testing, polls, evaluations. There's a training content library, so you can upload any document type or link to any website so that it can be an additional curriculum that they can click on and participate in or even download to their machine. I love the customized testing. Of course, email invites make it very easy. You know, this is the idea, is to make training be painless for you and for your attendees. Feedback is available. I want you to try it for free, and it's very easy to try it for free. If you are not a trainer, but there's somebody in your company who is, or maybe you've had to sit through bad training sessions before, you might want to mention GoToTraining. GoToTraining.com, 30 days free. And if you buy the 12-month plan, there's a 20% discount too. So this is a really great deal. GoToTraining.com.
Cool.
No special URL or anything. Just go there and get involved.
Leo, I might try this because when my book comes out in June, I want to offer a course about social media for people just to kind of complement the book. So I was thinking of doing like a presentation, a course where people can go through lessons and actually setting it up. So it could be like, I don't know, 4 or 5 different sessions that I do, but this might be something that I could use because it sounds like a pretty cool tool.
Yeah. Thank you, Citrix, for your support.
I'm gonna try it.
We appreciate it. Let's get some links then, and we'll get Katarina on the line.
All right. Okay, so start off with, this is appropriate for the conversation we had off the top of the show. Facebook is now, it now commands 41% of web traffic as far as social media traffic online.
And not merely 40%, but growing at a rate well beyond what anybody else is doing.
Yes, it sure is.
Wow. And that's the blue line there. On if you're looking on the TV, that the Facebook is the blue line. Look at this. Look at the spike there.
Yeah, so it's really spiking. You can see, you know, YouTube is still
YouTube's bigger. Eating.
Yeah, it is bigger. Not a huge surprise there, but Facebook continues to really explode. And I feel like this chart, for people who are listening, just to, you can check out the chart on Mashable. But I thought what was interesting here is we talk so much about Twitter and some of these other services, but really, compared to Facebook and YouTube, I mean, they have not very few users, but it definitely isn't one of the most popular social media websites.
Well, Facebook's number one, then MySpace, which is shrinking a little bit. Gmail is growing pretty fast, but still a distant third. Then Twitter, then LinkedIn, although LinkedIn has started to surpass Twitter, in fact, which is kind of a big growth for LinkedIn.
I know. I was really surprised because I still can't get hooked on LinkedIn.
No.
I don't know.
Well, you know, if you're not looking for work, if you were looking for work, I think you'd use it.
Yeah, I guess so.
And Ning, which is the, you know, Mark Andreessen's kind of build-it-yourself social system.
It's pretty level, yeah.
Yeah. The problem, you know, Ning just said, I think they're going to start charging. They're not going to be free anymore.
Yeah, and someone told me the other day that they laid off a bunch of people as well.
So it's not, I don't know how Ning is doing.
I don't know. I love the service, but yeah.
I know a lot of people use Ning. We use Ning for the geek cruises. You know, we do those Insight cruises. The next one is Mac Mania 11, which is going to South America and Antarctica, and that's next March or February. And so there's a Ning group. Don McAllister of Screencasts Online started this last couple of cruises. It's really great. Very easy. You have a social group around an event, and you control it. What I think is telling, though, is that this was the freemium model, right? That people used Ning for free, and then if they wanted more, they paid for it. And I think this is a failure of freemium because nobody paid for Ning.
Yeah, and you know what, Leo? I find this, just from talking to so many people who want to get into using social media tools, that sometimes people like to pay. And they, you know, even with Ning, you know, when I'm talking to companies and saying, hey, you should try out Ning if you want to build your own custom social network, I almost feel like they'd be more comfortable if it was a subscription model versus it being free, because then you have the ads and then they worry, like, why is it free? And
they're
very skeptical of the service. So, I mean, Ning is pretty amazing. I would definitely pay for it.
Yeah. Well, you may have to. Good news, Amber.
That's all that from.
Open your checkbook.
I want to pay for it. Actually, I'm just reading Rework from Jason Fried, and I know that you had him on the show when I wasn't there.
I'm sorry.
So I know, but I'm reading his book now, and it's. I just keep thinking back to 37 Signals and what a great business they've built.
They really are, yeah.
They're awesome.
Moving on, Google is telling people which countries are messing with them the most.
Yeah, which government agencies are requesting that Google remove content. I just thought that was kind of interesting. This was on TechCrunch. And as far as what country tops the list, Brazil is on top of the list.
Really?
Over 3,000 requests to remove content. And then the U.S. is next, and the United Kingdom, and then India and France. There's just something fun about looking at this chart.
Now, when it comes from the United States, is it coming from the U.S. government, or is it coming from business entities within the U.S.? I mean,
well, it says government agencies. So,
wow. So 123 requests in the U.S. Most of these are court orders. Okay. So there have been 3,580 data requests, 123 removal requests. 80% of removal requests fully or partially complied with. Mm-hmm. AdWords, apps, Blogger, Geo, Gmail. These are mostly, almost all court orders. So I guess that's what, when they, yeah, I guess that makes sense. I'm glad it's not the U.S. government saying, could you take that down?
Yeah, that would be a bad sign.
Now, Canada's only 16.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah. 12 YouTube takedown requests. I'm sure, I mean, you look, they get YouTube takedown requests all the time from private individuals.
Oh my gosh, no kidding.
I mean, there must be thousands and thousands every day.
Thank goodness for that site Vevo, where they put the music videos, because now it saves me from searching on YouTube and finding videos that have all been removed because of copyright violations.
Right.
I use that all the
Vevo
time.
Vevo is, we mentioned it, I think, a couple weeks ago when we were talking about Lady Gaga, is actually a YouTube product.
Yeah, it's fantastic. I mean, if you want to go and you want to find official music videos, I probably use Vevo now, I would say, even more than YouTube, because I didn't realize how much I was going to YouTube to find music videos.
Oh, but, that's interesting.
They have really high quality videos there, different versions of them, but they're all the official videos. So it's kind of fun because you don't have to sift through all this crap of like some 12-year-old kid who's said they uploaded a Lady Gaga video and it's, you know, a PowerPoint presentation with who knows what.
Right.
So it's funny.
Or
you're
getting Rickrolled. Yeah.
Yes.
That Google tool is at google.com/government requests. I'm going to make that. I think I might make that my a tip for this week in Google. I'm always looking for new tools.
Oh, that's a good idea.
Yeah, that's a good tool. I like that.
It's just fun to look through. I don't know why. Just interesting. Yeah. I love data like that. So should we get our guest on, Leo?
Let's get Katarina on. Katarina Fake, who is the co-founder of Flickr, left Yahoo not so long ago and has founded a new site called Hunch.com. We're going to talk about what that is and how it works, because it's pretty sophisticated stuff. Before we do, though, can I mention Squarespace.com? I know you love Squarespace.
Oh, I do.
I know Chris, your partner, loves Squarespace. He uses it for his website, ChrisDick.com. He's a photographer, and I think that, you know, people who are aesthetically oriented really have a thing for Squarespace, because it comes with these great templates that start you off right, and then it's just infinitely customizable. So you never feel like you have to be a cookie cutter, look like anybody else, and customizable with your mouse, drag and drop. If you're not a CSS pro, if you're a CSS pro, you'll like it. You have full control of everything, and JavaScript too. They could say templates that aren't templated, with point and click control over every design element. Great stats. The built-in stats package is great. An iPhone app that makes it easy to blog. The ability to import from your blog, whether it's movable type, WordPress, TypePad, or Blogger, they just go right in. Look at the examples, and you'll see what an amazing tool Squarespace is. It is not merely an engine. Oh, Clayton's on Squarespace. Look at, there's ClaytonMorris.com.
Oh, that's a nice site.
Funny guy. Gadgets, sci-fi, music, and sarcasm. So you can see, just like everybody now is using Squarespace. One of the advantages is Squarespace gives you a free trial for 2 weeks, 15 days. If you go to squarespace.com/night, I guess. Yeah, N-I-G-H-T, squarespace.com/night. You could try it even without a credit card. So you just set up that. This is kind of fun. Just set up a site. It includes hosting. The whole deal is as little as $8 a month. But if you use the coupon code NIGHT when you sign up, you're going to save 10% off that for the rest of your life. I like
pretty
that.
Sweet deal.
Sweet deal.
I love Squarespace. I just sat beside this guy in the plane who has this small printing company, and I made him a list of services he needed to sign up for to take his business online, and Squarespace was at the top of the list.
Yeah.
Because he doesn't even have a website yet.
Yeah. No, I think you're absolutely right. You got to have a website. And I tell people all the time about Squarespace because it's very affordable, but also it really is easy. And yet, it you know, you see these things like Home Site Builder and stuff that just make these, oh, gosh, awful sites.
Yeah.
Squarespace looks so pro. You'll never be embarrassed about your Squarespace site, I can assure you.
No.
Squarespace.com/night. Use the promo code night to save 10% on your Squarespace place. See, I made a rhyme.
You're talented, Leo.
Wow. Let me get Katarina on. I'm sure she's impressed by my rhyming, ability.
By now.
Yeah, really. Who are these people? Katarina Fake is a legend in the business. And there she is. Hi, Katarina.
Hi. Hi, everybody.
It's great to talk
to
you.
Likewise. Hi.
I have to. Oh, there's her. Let me get your video up, too. That's wonderful.
Here I am.
Yeah.
So, you're in San Francisco?
I am.
Are you located there?
I am bi-coastal.
Oh.
I am half New York, half San Francisco.
How nice for you. Yeah, Can I ask you a really stupid question?
Of course.
Is Fake your real name?
Oh, come on. How many times have I been asked?
It is.
Of course it is.
It is.
Yes.
It just begs to be asked.
Of course. Yes. Well, it's actually anglicized from the German. It used to be F-E-I-C-K.
Ah.
And, you know. Changed.
So you sold you created Flickr as a game to begin with. I know we're going over old territory, but there's a lot of people who don't know this yet. It was a game originally.
It was actually, you know, interestingly, we started the company to make a game and we ran out of cash. And as a Hail Mary, a last ditch effort to salvage the company, we created this photo sharing thing, which we figured we could flip quickly and then get back to the game. But then it became this juggernaut, you know, just massively successful and grew. And it became, you know, a big thing. So we ended up getting acquired by Yahoo, where I spent, you know, between 2005, 2008 working there. I worked on some social search products and Yahoo Answers and a bunch of things like that when I was working there, social search mostly. And that's what led me to my latest thing, Hunch.
Let me ask you about the game before we get to Hunch.
Sure.
Is it gone forever? Like, could it ever come back?
Game never ending. Well, you know, it's a sad thing. We actually had to shut it down, but you can't complain. Look, you create this very successful.
Fake was a good Hail Mary. It was an excellent Hail Mary.
It worked out, you know, like we snatched victory from the jaws of defeat.
Yeah. So it was an MMORPG, I think, yes?
That's right. And, you know, here's the thing that's interesting about Game Never Ending and all that is that we are not gamers. We are not, you know, people who were coming at this from, you know, a gaming background. We were actually coming at it from a social software background. And what was interesting to us about this product was that it was a context for social interactions. My whole thing and the thing that I've been kind of doing my whole career is working on ways for people to interact with each other. Collaboration, community, creativity, you know, all those ways that people work together and create things online. Those are the things that I'm mostly interested in. And so the game really itself was a context for social interactions.
So you always really have done the same thing.
Well, I guess that's not really true. I mean, I started off doing all kinds of crazy stuff before I got into the web. I mean, I worked doing interstitials for Seinfeld. I did.
Really?
Yeah,
oh, wow.
I worked as a dive shop in Arkansas, which you might note that, you know, Arkansas is landlocked, but I did work at a dive shop. All kinds of, you know, fun things.
What was it like going from running Flickr and it being kind of your baby to working at Yahoo?
I think that's always a tough transition for any entrepreneur, because you're used to just kind of calling the shots and being the boss and all that sort of thing. So, I mean, it was really important while I was at Yahoo to try to figure out, you know, what place in this organization can I actually contribute something? And I found a great group that, you know, I was able to have a lot of freedom, have a lot of, you know, I guess runway to actually build products. And then, you know, interestingly, I worked on a couple products there and I realized that it being a big company, one of the things that was most difficult was actually shipping products And so I did this organizational hack, I guess you would call it, called Brick House, which was a kind of a rapid development environment for new products. And that was very gratifying. We got a lot of great people on board, and we had a lot of very interesting products that were shipped out of that group. And then, you know, I left in, 2008? So, and then shortly thereafter, sadly, they shut it down. But during its brief tenure, I think that we were making really interesting, you know, innovative new products.
Some people call Flickr the first Web 2.0 site, I think.
I'd actually tend to agree with that. I mean, a lot of the things that you see out there, took the lead from some of the things that we did on Flickr. Some of those things would be tagging, this idea of posting things on other websites. It's interesting because Flickr, I think, was one of the first sites to do that. And it seemed counterintuitive at the time because everyone was saying, the bandwidth costs are going to be huge. But what people didn't realize were, hosting all of that stuff, the cost of that was going down. And so you saw sites like YouTube emulating that. You saw tagging happening everywhere. You saw smaller companies building a really fully fleshed out API the way that Flickr did. I mean, there were a ton of things that, Flickr pioneered that, I think we're now kind of taken for granted. But back in, 2003, 2004, when we were doing this stuff, it was all very new.
What was it like when you actually left Yahoo? You know, at that point, did you know you were going to go out and start Hunt, or was there another project in between?
Well, the way that I got involved with Hunt was I'm on the board of Etsy, which is, I don't know if you're familiar with
it. Oh, we love Etsy.
We love it, yeah.
Oh, great. I love Etsy too. It's a fantastic company. Love Etsy. And they're based in Brooklyn in New York. And I was flying out all the time to go to the board meetings. And the way that I was introduced to Hunt was I decided that I would be interested in joining another board. And I wasn't sure when I left Yahoo what I was going to do. I had a whole bunch of projects that I was working on. I had a bunch of ideas for a new company. But I was kind of taking my time. I had a new baby, for example, and I figured that like joining another board and maybe doing some advising, sitting on advisory boards and boards would be the best thing for me. But then I was introduced to the guys at Hunt and loved what they were doing. So I joined the board, and then it turned out to be kind of a ruse. It was they're trying to get the thin edge of the wedge in and kind of grabbed me and got me working on Hunt. So that's kind of how I ended up with those guys. And we are, we launched Hunt how many months ago is it? Like, I think 8 or 9 months ago. And, it's been a like wonderful, great new project for me.
So can you describe what Hunt is? Because Leo and I touched on it a little bit, but I'm sure you could do a much better job.
Sure. Well, Hunt is interesting. Hunt is a recommendation site which learns about you, and it gives you personalized recommendations. And so those recommendations can be just about anything. It could be, travel vacation sites or cookbooks or motor scooters or blenders or New York Times bestsellers. It could be pretty much anything. And the way that Hunt works is it learns about you. It asks you a series of questions, and those questions are, they should be fun. Some of them are, have you ever been skydiving? There you go. What's the last time you watched the sunrise?
Not a good question. Longer than a year ago.
That kind of stuff. Yeah. Do you live in the city or the country or the suburbs? And so it should be fun. And who is a better expert on you than yourself? And these should be, kind of entertaining and fun. Have you ever used an online dating site?
No.
Do you like bumper cars?
Uh-oh, do you own a pair of handcuffs?
Don't answer that one, Leah.
No, I
do. There you go. So what we do is we kind of figure out what the correlations are for various people to learn what they like and what they don't like. And so we can make pretty good predictions of, which hotel, like, say you're going to Dallas and you don't really know Dallas very well, you could figure out what would be a good hotel for you in Dallas, et cetera. So that's what Hunt does. And it's really interesting because it's a really interesting combination of, I would say, man and machine. All of the content that you see there on the site, all of the questions that are being asked, everything has been contributed by users. So it's a user-generated site, much in the way that Flickr is a user-generated site and Wikipedia is a user-generated site. But also it's got an incredible amount of really superior hardcore engineering happening behind the scenes. All of the recommendations are algorithmically driven, and I think that is one of the things that makes Hunt really interesting.
It's also, I'm sorry to say, one of the things that makes it a little confusing for people. They don't really know what's going on immediately.
Yeah, and you know, it's interesting because we had a bit of a chicken and egg problem when we built the site.
It's a challenge. If you want to innovate, you might throw people off a little bit. If you copy something existing, then everybody knows and it's easy.
Everybody understands it. And interestingly, like Flickr was very much the same way. People didn't understand what it was.
Right.
You know, people had been habituated to sites like OPhoto and Shutterfly and things like that. And so when they got to Flickr, they're like, what is this like photo stream idea?
Sharing.
Why would you default to public?
Right.
And, you know, what's an API? And, you know, all these people, I mean, it was actually kind of confusing at first. And the thing is that, you know, Flickr was kind of plowing new ground. And I think similarly, and I think as an entrepreneur, the most exciting thing that you can do is really, you know, do something that you have no idea what you're doing when you get into it. You're trying to invent something. You're making something brand new. So I do think that, you know, it's likely that, you know, as we home in on what we're doing with Hunt, it'll become more and more understandable.
Is there a happy medium? I mean, is there something you try to go for where it's new, it's innovative, but it's not so innovative that it confuses people?
Yeah, I mean, I do think that we have to start dialing back on a lot of what we have on the site. So we started at the site, we understood that we had this chicken and egg problem where we had to have a lot of content contributed to it. We had to have a lot of people interacting with it before we would have enough data to be able to make recommendations. And so we had a kind of a cold start problem. We needed to get a lot of people in there. We needed to get a lot of contributions. And so I think that the site that you're seeing right today is very much based around the contribution model. And now we're flipping things around, and now we're able to use all the information that we spent the last 8 to 9 months gathering, and we are able to make much better recommendations before. So you're about to see in the next few weeks a rollout of a whole raft of new features, which are going to be showing you that kind of thing.
Well, for instance, when I see this question, I love these. By the way, every time I go to Hunch.com, I answer about 20 questions because it's fun.
It's fun, yeah.
I mean, I don't know why.
It's deliberately designed to be that way. I mean, we really want
to
make it engaging. It's a game. It's kind of a game, right? And you have all those like what I'm looking at right now that you've got up there on the screen is you've got all of these funky lamps. You've got a Tiffany lamp. You have a very traditional lamp. You have, you know, a super, super funky lamp, right? And like super mod.
And it says which of these would be most likely to be found in your home.
Yeah, so there you go.
Going to use that in some particular way or?
Yeah, so here's the thing that's really interesting about the way that the site works is that all of these questions that we're asking are predictive of things. And, you know, some of the things that are predictive are things that you wouldn't even know. So here's an example. So if you wear cufflinks, you're significantly more likely to get thrown out of a bar for rowdy behavior.
And I think rightly so.
Right? So,
that's funny.
And then, so what that means, what that may imply is that, you know, you might want to go to one of those boutique-y hotels that has that kind of has like a nightclub type feel in the lobby, you know. So all of the inputs and all of the information that all the questions that we're asking you are actually to an end. You know, it turns out if you've broken a leg, you know, before the age of 20 or something like that, you'd be more likely to enjoy sports games on your Xbox.
Interesting.
So neat.
It's kind of fascinating.
How many questions do you need to answer before you have a pretty good idea of who I am?
It's somewhere around like 30 questions. Oh. And interestingly, like people, like, you know, as I said, you know, as you were saying before, you know, you kind of can't help yourself but keep answering the questions.
Right.
And the average user answers about 120 questions.
Oh, my goodness. What are some of the advantages to having an account versus, like, I know you can go through some of the questions when you're not logged in, for example.
I think it's significantly, the results are significantly better once you're logged in and once we have, you know, once you've answered a bunch of the questions. And so I think what you'll eventually see is that we're going to be phasing out the logged out experience because we've done enough data gathering on that front. and start to make it, you know, better and better as a logged in experience.
Well, help me. And I, by the way, you've added a lot of features since I was here last. So you're obviously always adding new stuff, which is cool. But so I've answered a bunch of questions, which is so far what Hunch has been to me. What should I do next?
Well, the next thing you want to do is you want to start using it whenever you're taking a trip or you're buying a book or you need a recommendation for a camera. Like, for example, I just bought an exercise bike, spending too much time sitting in front of the computer, and I needed to do some exercise. But I also heard from a friend of mine that you can use your iPad while sitting on an exercise bike. So this sounded
now I'm liking it. Yeah.
So there you go. So I'm like, okay, so what exercise bike can I use? And so I went to Hunch and I got a recommendation for an exercise bike. So that was the way that I was using the site recently. I used it to find a laptop bag. I'm such a geek. Listen to me.
Well, you're in good company, Katarina, I got to tell you.
These are the things that I use it for. I needed a laptop bag that was like a little bit fashion forward. Now, I don't like want kind of like one of those black, you know, anonymous ones. I don't need a backpack one. I need one that's kind of stylish. So,
but it knew that you were fashion forward because you've answered enough questions. So you didn't have to tell it that.
So I would go to Hunch. And that's the thing about Hunch is like it knows my taste. It knows it. And knows that I'm kind of like a, you know, like a fancy laptop bag type person. And, you know, someone else might be like a more utilitarian laptop bag type person.
So here's the one it recommended for me, the Book BOA 3M, the backpack of choice for demanding, frequently traveling creative professionals.
Is that you?
I like it. I like it. I want one.
There you go.
Now, do you get a commission on the sales here? I mean, how do you monetize this?
So that's exactly what the business is. I mean, it's similar to any site where, if you go to, you know, if you follow that link and you go and you buy the book
BOA 3M, yeah,
exactly. If you go buy that, then you know, Hunch gets, you know, a few cents here and there. And as we know from Google and other companies that have a similar business, that can be a very lucrative business.
Sure,
model.
You just pick up the crumbs. Absolutely.
Yes.
I think the time when I realized that Hunch was so interesting was when Leo and I were playing with the Twitter predictor game, trying to figure out what our Twitter followers were like, and it was unbelievably accurate.
Yes, so that's been a big hit for you. That's really interesting. And what we're doing there is basically looking at, there's a certain subset of your followers who are Hunch users, and we're able to look at their, you know, look at what their patterns are and be able to make predictions, you know, kind of based on that around they might share some of the tastes as you. And it's a good way to kind of solve the cold start problem for people who haven't logged on. And it's extraordinarily predictive.
You have a games section, and this is in the games section. So let's just play the game here. My Twitter username. I'm sure there's a lot of processing here.
The computer is thinking.
It's thinking. And then there's a couple of questions. Are you homeschooling your children? I'm going to say no. And it's going to say whether that's what you got it right.
It's going to guess.
Okay, so it did. And it said it got that one right.
You can click on next round. Yeah, there you go.
How would you describe your current weight? Oh, let's see what Hunch guesses.
Oh.
It got it right. I'm overweight.
It guessed that you were overweight.
Bastards. Oh, so far 3 out of 3. I am a parent. Are you comfortable talking baby talk to babies? You bet. So far 4 out of 4, right? Have you ever changed a baby's diaper? Well, of course, 5 out of 5. Now, it got this from my Twitter?
Yeah, your Twitter username.
So far, it's 6 for 6. I do like being the leader. Celsius or Fahrenheit? Well, that's easy. Everybody knows it's... Oh, you like Celsius, Amber?
Although it's guessing. It actually might guess if you were European that you would be...
I think that's probably what it's doing. After a wonderful meal and great service, the restaurant bill comes and is missing a $60 bottle of wine. Do you inform the waiter, pay the bill, but leave a large tip? Pay the bill and leave a standard tip? I inform the waiter. And it guessed right. This is kind of scary, Katarina. What kind of engine are you using in here? I mean, is this pretty high-end AI kind of thing?
Oh yeah, I mean, you know, the Hunch team consists mostly, I mean, I don't know why they let me hang around there, but it consists mostly of, you know, MIT PhDs in machine learning and computer science. So
interesting.
So it's just pulling out all of the data from any tweets you've sent out and people you reply to on Twitter? Is that kind of how
it
works?
I mean, it's mostly kind of homegrown in the system that we've built and the combination of the questions and the things that people like or they don't like. For example, we have what we call a success rate. And when you go to a topic and if you say that you like something or you read more about it or you click through a link and purchase it, then we know that it's something that some, you know, it's been a very successful recommendation. And so we, you know, we learn over time, and this is why we say, you know, the system gets better and better the more people use it. And, you know, as time goes by and we train more of the results and more of the data in the system, it gets better and better and is able to make those kinds of predictions.
Well, it's 15 for 15 so far. I'm starting to get a little nervous. It seems to know everything possible.
I know. Your wife doesn't know you that well.
No, I'm telling you. This is let's see. It hasn't made a mistake yet.
Oh,
wow.
See?
This is good. So, and now is this also from my hunch answers or is it just from my Twitter?
It's from your Twitter. That one is actually just using your Twitter information. Wow. And we,
isn't it interesting how much you reveal on Twitter without knowing?
Yeah.
It's interesting because it's actually, you know, stuff that we've got in our system from people on Hunch who are your followers.
Yeah. You're matching what you know about them to some sort of profile with me, even though you don't know that about me, you could predict.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know,
that's scary.
There's so much great content there. I was just checking out the ways to eat an orange as far as recommendations. I mean, runs the gamut as far as.
There's also like, you know, a lot of it, there's a kind of a whole section called, you know, just for fun. You could spend hours browsing that.
So if you were Google, I think people would get scared. But because you're not Google, I think you can get away with something like this.
Well, the thing is that I think, you know, it's a very clear social contract. I mean, that, you know, other sites don't have. You know, I think it's much scarier when people are collecting information about you behind the scenes.
Yes.
Without
you're very explicit.
It.
You're
and
very
you're
explicit.
Very explicitly yeah. saying, you know, answer these questions and we're going to give you recommendations. And you can choose not to answer questions. You can delete anything that you want. You can, you know, operate under a pseudonym, all those kinds of things. But, you know, it's a very clear relationship. And I think that, you know, the much scarier kind of situations are where people are kind of collecting information about you without your knowing it.
Mm.
So there's a goodie on here where you can say, what people, famous Twitter people and what their followers are likely to say.
Yes. So you can do things like, you know, like Shaquille O'Neal. Oh, look, there's Leo Laporte.
When Hunch asks this, how are you most likely to talk about computers? My followers say like a gearhead talking about a 4-barrel V8.
There you go. I would say that's pretty accurate.
This is all really accurate.
Yeah.
Yeah. Audiobooks, yes. Backpack, male or female. Never wear makeup.
all these goodies are really there to just demonstrate Hunch's predictive abilities and its smartness and how it is able to make good recommendations for you behind the scene and kind of learn people's tastes and tendencies.
So the next step is to take all this great information. How many people have participated? How much data? How big is the database of information?
Oh, we've had. At last count, I mean, I haven't checked this for a month or more, but, you know, the last time I looked, we had over 50 million questions answered.
Wow.
And, you know, millions and millions of users having input all of those questions, you know, since the launch of the site. So, you know, I think that we've now reached a point where we can actually, you know, really exploit all of this data that we've gathered in order to give people the best recommendations for themselves as individuals. I mean, I do think that, you know, as with a lot of sites like this, we do very well for, you know, like gearheads, you know, like probably the audience that's
yeah.
watching this today,
yeah.
You know, early adopters and technology people. We're probably less predictive for
normal,
you know,
people.
Like, yeah. Well, for you, people who are, you know, older or more rural or sort of less kind of web savvy, and that we expect that over time we'll be able to serve those people. But I mean, even now, I mean, if you go to that page of the Twitter followers and you put in like Oprah,
yeah,
somebody or Martha Stewart or somebody like that, we're actually pretty good. It's not bad. It's not bad.
That is interesting. I guess if you have that many data points, even the outliers are going to be accurate.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, it takes time to, there you go, Oprah followers.
Yeah.
So you see what it says about them.
Yeah. Celebrity gossip of interest to you? Yes. Do you like award shows like the Oscars and Grammys? Love them. How
yeah.
frequently do you wear makeup? Every day. By the way, Amber, your followers, never. Are you male
never
or female?
Wear makeup?
Well, because your followers are primarily male. Oprah's
yeah,
are primarily female.
And gearheads, yeah.
She's got a Louis Vuitton wallet.
Yeah.
This is really...
It's interesting, and I think that if you went and you looked at Martha Stewart, they'd be slightly different. They'd be,
Interesting.
You know, I mean, you know, I hate to generalize, but less materialistic and more DIY. Not that, you know, I guess Martha.
This is really fun. I mean, I just think it's really interesting. Yeah.
So they wear makeup every day. Oh, here we go. Do you carry anything in your pockets? No, it would ruin the line of my clothing.
That's Martha Stewart. This is good. Wearing vintage clothes. They prefer vintage.
Yeah, they're more DIY. They're more kind of scrappy.
Yes, I routinely knit sweaters, build birdhouses, make stained glass.
Yeah, they also like, you know, George Clooney.
Yeah. See, Amber's followers, you want to see who your followers like, who find most attractive? It's the same one as mine. It's the brunette. Because most of her followers are male. Most of her followers are male. Is that Eva Longoria? Yeah.
That's Eva Longoria. Find
most? So, Amber, this is when your followers are asked this question, who do you find most attractive?
They say Eva Longoria.
Eva Longoria, which is the same as my followers.
Yeah, here's another interesting factoid from Hunch is that women are happy to say that Nicole Kidman or Eva Longoria are attractive, but men will never say, they will never say that, unless they are gay, they will never say that, you know, Mario Lopez or George Clooney is attractive. You know, it's funny because women are more likely to just say somebody is attractive even if they're of the same gender.
Huh. Men, though, no.
Yeah, they don't do it.
Yeah.
Not so much.
You know so much in this. It's so fascinating, and I can't wait to see what you you do with it. It seems like a recommendation engine is just the beginning.
Oh, yes. I mean, you can see how this could be applied. You could take your taste information and bring it anywhere on the web. So, you know, ultimately what our goal is on this site is to basically build a taste graph for the entire internet.
Oh, I like it.
Mapping, it's a taste graph, you know, analogous to like a social graph. And so we want to map every person on the internet to every entity on the internet. And that entity could be, you know, anything like a hotel or a cookbook or Mario Lopez. And their affinity for that entity, whether or not they would like it or not. And so, you know, a lot of people talk about the social graph as being this very important thing. But what we're really trying to do is, figure out what you would like and what you wouldn't like. And, you know, the kind of based on your tastes and predilections and preferences.
Do you ever find it difficult to choose what to do next? I mean, there's in the internet and entrepreneurially. There must be so many options, so many interesting things to pursue.
I know, you know, this is the thing, you know, I think that, you know, Steve Jobs said this. He said, you know, I'm more proud of the things that we didn't do than the things that, you know, we necessarily did. And he says that, and it's very true, because choosing the right thing to do and narrowing it down and being selective and, you know, as an entrepreneur, it's really difficult. There's, you know, bright, shiny objects everywhere. Right. And in order to have the discipline to stick to your, you know, your plan, but, you know, allowing enough flexibility, I mean, it's a fine line. You know, this is art, not science, in order to try to figure out what it is that you're going to work on.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, what you don't do is just as important as what you do do.
I love it.
Very cool. So you're going to be at Hunch for a while?
I will be. Yes, for sure.
Katarina, so nice to meet you. What a thrill.
Likewise.
Yes. Yeah. Thank you so much for joining us on the show. It's great to talk to you.
Yeah, this has been fun.
Katarina Fake, HUNCH.com, if you'd like to start answering the questions. In a survival situation, Amber, do you think you'd be able to consume human flesh? Yes, Pat's the ketchup. No, there's bound to be another option.
I'd have to say no right now, Leo, but that's because I just ate lunch.
Thank you, Katarina.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. All right, bye-bye.
Oh, what a thrill to meet her. I mean, such a legend in the industry.
I know. You know, I'm just thinking of the list of people we've interviewed, and I just an oversight that we never had her on yet, you know. But it's nice to get her now and be able to talk about this new service. And she's just a pile of energy, too.
She's a kid. I mean, that's what's amazing is how young this class of web success stories are.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I come from the generation, the Steve Jobs, Bill Gates, we're in our 50s generation. And there's this newer, younger generations, 10, 15 years younger than us, that are now, you know, the Ev Williams and the Katarina Fakes of the world.
And it's really about the web. The web is really what's powered all of this stuff.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's fun to get her to kind of walk through Hunch, because it was one of those sites that I initially went to and I wasn't quite sure, like you said, how to use it. So, but once you start talking about it and the plans for the future, you just feel like, wow, they are onto something. And yeah. Like you said, it's just kind of the beginning of the site.
Well, wow. All right. Let's continue on. We have a few more links. Of course, our video of the week is coming up, and I'm very excited about that because it's my favorite show.
Oh, good. You know what, Leo? I always try to find stuff that I think that you like.
Did you have a hunch?
I do. I have a hunch about you. I feel like I can kind of predict. But, you know, like anyone else, it's probably because you share a lot of stuff that you like online.
We like the same things. That's why.
Yeah, exactly. It's not that difficult. Okay, so a couple
I do like
links.
Donuts. And it's, by the way, the national dish of Canada, many people will say poutine or they'll say maple syrup. But anybody who's ever been to Canada knows it's the donut.
Tim Hortons donuts. I don't eat donuts, but I see a lot of people who do.
You don't look like you eat donuts.
I'm more of an ice cream fan if I had to choose, but Dunkin' Donuts has just released their top 12 fan-created donuts. And this is kind of a common theme on the web, especially with social media, where people are choosing different flavors of drinks like Mountain Dew, and they're actually naming different products for these big companies. I know Doritos had a contest in Canada recently where people could actually name the next flavor of Doritos. And I think it was called Spicy 2.0. I think that's what won.
That sounds so horrible.
I know, but Dunkin' Donuts has done the same thing. So they have 12 fan-created donuts, and it's kind of funny to check out some of the names. And then they write who created them. Like, I'll give you an example. The Cop Cake, a cake donut with chocolate icing topped with white sprinkles.
I'll take it.
And topped with peanut butter cups. Yeah.
Yum. Okay.
Yeah, so there's 12 of those different types of new donuts.
Wouldn't you love to get invited to the Dunkin' Donuts labs? And yeah. I mean, that sounds like a lot of fun.
Oh yeah,
I'd love to. I'd love to. And then do they judge it? Who gets to be the judge
of the donut contest?
Yeah,
I'm not sure who gets to judge it, but that's a good question. Like they have to be Homer Simpson-esque.
Donuts. Well, I've got the figure for it. If they ever need another judge,
I'll look into it, Leo, and I'll give you an update next week to see if maybe
donuts.
We can contribute somehow.
Donuts. So if you go to DunkinDonuts.com/donut, you can see the winners. Oh, actually, their voting is still going on. Is that right?
I guess so. Yeah. I know they've released 12 fan created donuts, so I assumed that though.
Oh,
that
you know, they're smart. It's not over yet. And it's
not
pretty close.
Yet.
There's no obvious winner, except the Monkey See Monkey Donut and the Smorgasbord. Ooh, that sounds good. Let's take a look at the Smorgasbord. It's a round shell raised donut with marshmallow filling, chocolate icing, and graham cracker crunch.
I just think donuts are disgusting. I don't know.
Really?
I'm just not
well, they are. They're just fried donuts. You know, my son loves donuts.
Yeah.
And we talked about this. And he likes Krispy Kreme, which is the kind of the flavor that everybody in the States loves. He's never had a Tim Hortons, so don't hold it against him. But I said donuts are one of those things that you, when you look at them and you eat them, you're happy. And the minute they land in your stomach, it's like, why? Why? When will I ever learn?
You're funny.
They just sit there.
You know, you crack me up, Leo, because you just had like this diet meal, and now I mentioned donuts, and I feel like I've taken you into happiness.
Your fault! All right. Speaking of Happy Land, our video of the week, we're going to wrap this thing up. I am so excited about this. Do you watch Glee?
Okay, so this is why I brought it up. I flew out to Edmonton last week, and I have watched every single movie on Air Canada that they have on their entertainment system, which they don't change them enough. So
it's
so frustrating. Anyway, but they do have all of these different TV shows. And my friend Rahaf, who we haven't had her on the show, but we've talked to her before.
Yeah, I know Rahaf,
Yeah, so she had mentioned Glee. She's like, Amber, you have to watch it. And I'm like, I hate musicals. It sounds stupid.
You hate musicals?
Yeah, I don't really love musicals. But then she said, no, it's very well written and it's funny. And I thought, okay. So then I fly out to Edmonton and I watched all the episodes that were available. And it's a fantastic show. I love it.
Oh, it's any show that people burst into song, as far as I'm concerned, is good.
It's fun. Yeah. So I found this parody video online.
This is from Babble Gum, which I'd never heard of Babble Gum.
Yeah, it once. I thought it was from the UK, if I'm correct. Maybe not. So it's Glee in 60 seconds. So it's kind of summarizing Glee for people who maybe don't know a lot about it. And
Now Glee has started up again. The second season began, and I have to say I was glued to the TV to watch it. I ran a cable across the room so that we could watch it on the big screen. And I'm a big fan. I don't know why. It's kind of a junky show, but when those kids burst into song, I just
oh, it was so good!
I just love it. And I love Sue. So here it is from Babblegum.com's Glee in 60 Seconds. Amber MacArthur will take this opportunity to say goodnight. Don't forget, Amber is at CommandN.TV. That's her great video blog that every week, great stuff. You can catch her on CP24 with her Web Nation TV show all over Canada, and her blog is AmberMac.com. Follow her on Twitter. She's Amber Mac.
Yeah. And you can pre-order my book too now if you want to learn more about social media. And that's just at powerfriending.com.
Powerfriending.com. And she's available to speak, but not until 2012.
not for a few more months.
Say hi to Connor and Chris, and I'll see you next time on Net at Night.
I'm the best singer in Glee.
No, I'm the best singer in Glee.
I'm quitting Glee.
Glee Club is my life.
It's very obvious that we're going to end up together.
I know these storylines are ridiculous, but it's okay because we make fun of ourselves. Now sing this new song without any preparation.
I'm quitting Glee.
Oh! Are you pregnant?
Yes.
Are you pregnant?
No.
Are you pregnant?
Yes.
There is no money for new music stands. We can only afford coordinating outfits, classroom stage lighting, and a backing band that appears out of nowhere.
Ludicrous.
Is this a real life song or the kind where no one else can hear?
Glee Club is my life.
I'm being blackmailed.
I'm not going to quit Glee.